Chancellor, my guess is that the part of your new role as chief academic officer at Washington University is that you will not have to, as they say, work the legislature. Now, your successor and the school's representatives will have to deal with a new governor who has taken square aim at UNC. He's appointed the nemesis of UNC, Art Pope, an arch-conservative architect of the Pope Foundation on Higher Education, to be the state budget director. Now, the school already had budget problems, so how great a cause of concern is this?
Well, I think it's a huge cause of concern, and there are a lot of things in the governor's budget that are troubling. But I also believe that the university is obligated to provide the legislature with as detailed an understanding of higher education and what our goals and objectives are and how we operate as can possibly be done. And I think that what that takes is energy and optimism, and I believe that Carol Folt and the legislative team that we have, Jennifer Willis, who's very experienced in North Carolina politics, will argue their case aggressively. And Carolina has been here for 200-plus years, and we've had all kinds of different political discussions and opposition, and here we are still a top 10 research university doing all the great things that we are. So the new folks will soldier on, and the new politicians will learn a lot about Carolina and how important it is to the state.
Well, Republican Governor McCrory says he wants to change the way higher education is funded in North Carolina. He wants the school to be focused more on careers for graduates and away from academic pursuits, quote, that have no chance of getting people jobs, to which you respond.
Well, I've been well staked out for my whole time in higher education on the importance of a liberal arts education. And our whole innovation initiative is based on the recognition of the fact that we need broadly educated people to create the new ideas in this country, and that we can't train people for jobs that are going to exist 4 years after they start college, because our students are going to be working for 70 years maybe, if you think about what the life expectancy of our recent graduates, certainly 60 years. And so our job is to teach them for a lifetime of working and contributing. And the way we do that is the way that we have done it for 200 years, which is to teach them to teach themselves and to teach them to love learning and reading and writing. And those are the things that we've done successfully all these years. And America's higher education system is the greatest in the world. And I believe it always will be. And the reason is because the liberal arts education has been the defining characteristic of American higher education. And universities all over the world are trying to copy it. And they're not having long panel discussions with various politicians about whether it's a good idea. China and India and Singapore are building American-style liberal arts-based research universities as fast as they can build them. And for us to be spending time arguing over whether it's a good idea to have done it the way we have done it is putting it as us at a competitive disadvantage.
How much of UNC's funding comes from the legislature right now, and how has that changed over the last decade?
Well, it's still over $400 million that we get in state appropriations, and that has shrunk to about 18% of the operating budget. But when you hear that number, it's important to remember the fact that that number is just the arithmetic of the operating budget. It doesn't include the physical plant, which is owned by the state of North Carolina and for which we don't pay any rent. So if you were to think about what the value of that would be, and in going to Washington University, I'm very cognizant of that because refreshing the physical plant is a physical challenge that the provost is very involved in. And the other thing that it doesn't do is look at the percentage of the money that we use for teaching that comes from state appropriations. So we have $400 million from state appropriations and another $250 or so from tuition. And that's what we call the general fund. So the other pieces of income that the university gets are all dedicated to specific functions. And so if you think about the money that we get specifically to operate the teaching part of the university, In fact, the state appropriations closer to two-thirds of that.
So it's hard to envision a time in your lifetime when the university might, as maybe some others. It seems to me University of Virginia is less dependent on the state than the University of North Carolina. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And I would say that among the truly great research universities, public research universities of the country, Carolina and Wisconsin are the two, and Florida are the three that still have the kind of state support that we do. California used to be there with us, but with all the troubles that they've had, they've come to depend much more on tuition. So I sincerely hope that we will be able to continue at Carolina to have the kind of support we have, because the changes that have had to be made, for example, in California to adapt to being a more tuition-driven model have had lots of different consequences.
So when we look at the checks and balances, if you did not have that state support at that level, the university would have the freedom to do things more the way it would like to do.
And there are days when we would love to have that. But if you look at the and you hear all the time, particularly from the universities that only have 4 or 5% of their operating budget from their states, you know, why are we having to put up with all these state government restrictions when we're only getting so little money? But and that's, of course, there are days in South Building and across the campus where people make that analysis here. But the state support does two things that you just can't replace. One is to allow students to come to Carolina and have the same experience that they would have at a private university without having to leave their home state, because there are a lot of kids who just wouldn't be emotionally prepared to move to Boston to get a great college education. And the second is that we don't have a $60,000 sticker price, that even though schools that have that price do a great job with financial aid, there are a huge number of students who are scared off from applying in the first place by those high sticker prices. And so those things are to be cherished at the University of North Carolina. They create, one of the things that's so special about a public university is the diversity of backgrounds that students bring, and also the diversity of ambitions that they have. So it's much more likely at Carolina to find students who want to join the Peace Corps and want to go work at a museum and want to do rural medicine and want to go to Silicon Valley and work at Starbucks until they find a job at a startup. And they're not all focused on getting that offer from McKinsey or Goldman or getting into medical school as the students who are paying $60,000 a year to go to college. And that creates that wonderful environment that everybody is so crazy about at Carolina comes from the high degree of academic accomplishment the students bring, with the diversity of backgrounds and objectives that they have. And that is the essence of Carolina.
Finally, Chancellor, I think Michael Hooker would roll over in his grave if he knew that the comments by recently that we've heard from Art Pope and Governor McCrory made me think of Michael Hooker in challenging the paradigm, challenging the status quo. James Meeser, your predecessor, said in the studio one time that the universities are not really liberal, but the most conservative, hidebound, resistant to change organizations in society. And I'm thinking about Michael Hooker, who wrote that paper that's been floated around here for a long time, where he said, if we focus on learning, there are many traditions that we ought to question. Where's the proof that 120 credit hours makes an educated person? What does the baccalaureate degree, what does it really certify? And so those are big kind of macro sort of questions that are hard to tackle, as we talked about earlier, when things are going well. But does anyone on the campus spend any time with any substance really looking at that, looking at whether we ought to think about changing the paradigm?
Well, we spend a lot of time talking about the undergraduate experience and what it means and how it should change. And the trustees have had a set of committees looking at these questions that will make a report to Chancellor Folt for her to consider these big issues. But I think that, and again, this goes back to a lot of different things that we've talked about today, but the main problem that we're wrestling with is that the complexity that these institutions have taken on in terms of the hospital, in terms of intercollegiate sports, in terms of the high degree of service we provide, in terms of campus safety, all of these things that the public is very, very interested in, taking care of that does make it harder to contemplate these big questions. And so I think in terms of asking your listeners to participate in this, supporting the administration in a way that trusts the decisions that get made about these non-academic matters is what needs to happen in order to provide the opportunity for the university to discuss the very kinds of questions that you're raising. And our private peers who don't have to lobby the legislature and don't have to do public relations in the same way and don't have big-time sports, they have more time to debate these issues. And that's a competitive disadvantage for public universities.
You also raised an interesting question last week about the university's governance overall. When you talked in that sports panel, you said many of the governing boards include at least some, but by no means all of the people who sought appointment on the boards precisely so they could get close to athletics. And that brings up a question, I think, that if you could be the king, if you didn't have to worry about the politics of it, and you're going away now, would you change the governance process of the university?
Oh, yes, I would. I think we have the most complicated, convoluted governance system. I'm sure in 1971, when Mr. Friday devised the whole thing, it made perfect sense. But to have two governing boards, both politically appointed, I don't think there's anything you can do about the fact that in a public university you have a politically appointed board. But to have two boards, one board of trustees and one board of governors, where there's always debate and some confusion about where the authority lies, makes it very, very hard to figure out the right course of action. I mean, if you take the president plus the two boards, the chancellor works for 45 politically appointed people. And, you know, private universities have large boards, but they're not politically appointed, and some of them serve for a long time, so they develop a lot of expertise about the university. And so, yes, if I had the ability to change the system, I think we ought to go to a system where the chancellor just works for one board. And I don't think that's going to happen because it would displace people who are in roles that they have sought deliberately. But, yes, I think that that puts North Carolina at a competitive disadvantage compared to states where the president and chancellor is either working for just a campus board or just a system board.
Chancellor Holden, you've always said, just call me Holden. I think that reflects the generally non-ostentatious way that you've gone about your business here. So I'm going to conclude by dropping my reporter's skeptical objectivity for a moment. And I know that I think I speak for about everyone listening to this when I note that wherever you go, I think you will always be one of us. And, of course, the same applies to Patty. We started with the top headline, which was the big news. But I'd like to close with sort of your parting thoughts, how you want historians and local citizens to remember your service to UNC and what you may want to say to them.
Well, I hope people will remember, and I think the events and things that have happened in September and in the last few weeks show that I care deeply about the people who work at the university, who go to school at the university, and who live here in Chapel Hill. I think some commentary might say that I cared too much about that and not enough about some of the external constituents. And if that's true, then I guess I'll take that because I care deeply about the people who work here and the people who live in this community and the students who go to school at Chapel Hill. And so the progress that we've made in town politics and the progress that we've made in labor relations and the strong support that I have enjoyed from the faculty. Those are the things that mean the most to me and to Patty, because we care about the people of this town and the people of this university community. And so I hope that's how people will remember me.
And nothing about remembering the way you played that guitar or the keyboard?
Well, you know, I've told some people when I've spoken at events and gotten a few laughs, I said, if the new chancellor is funnier than I am, please don't tell me.
Chancellor Holden, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.